All right, we are back here at New York Comic Con 2017. I am Ben Morse, Editorial Director of Digital Media at Marvel, joined by
Editor Eric Goldman.
And we have got with us the great Robbie Thompson. That's right, the great Robbie Thompson. How are you doing, man?
I'm a little tired. My voice is starting to crack again. I think I'm going through puberty one more time. But it's day 62 of New York Comic Con, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, he understands. He understands what it feels like.
Now, you've been doing overtime work for Marvel lately because you did all the primer pages for Legacy, which are great. They're awesome. I want to get inside your head a little bit about that. How did you get approached to do it? What was your strategy? Tell us all about working on these very cool additions to Marvel Legacy.
Nick Lowe, sweet, dulcet-toned Nick Lowe, who I got to see sing Pitbull last night, which if you've never heard...
Oh, you went to karaoke with Nick?
Yeah. I
mean, I'm so jealous.
I've never seen a man quite perform like that. But no, he gave me a call and was like, hey, I have this weird project that I think you might be right for. Mm-hmm. And you'd be getting to work with Darren and Kathleen again, who I worked with and love. He was basically like, talk to Darren about, you know, what we're looking for, but he told me about what Marvel Legacy was going to be, and it's weird, like, once you start working in comics, it's like, oh yeah, I can't wait for this 2 years from now, it's a really weird experience, so it's great to finally be talking about it. But then I got on the phone with Darren, and he basically broke down what we were doing, which are these three-page sort of origin stories, but also, in some cases, because some of the books are so epic and, like, they span decades, it's kind of almost like a greatest hits in a way. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind it, he was like, you know, like, our goal is two things, like, let's make these fun and welcoming to new readers, but also rewarding for readers, you know, long-term readers, which is kind of a difficult task in three pages. But, you know, Darren was great. Like, he was able to coordinate with, you know, like a gazillion editors, because each editor had a different point of view on what they wanted the legacy pages to be. Because it was really important to kind of, in some cases, it was like a simple origin, you know, kind of help us, you know, set the tone for what the book was going to be. But in other cases, we wanted to kind of also cover some recent history so that any reader that was kind of coming in, they could read that first issue of a Marvel Legacy book, enjoy that first story, and if they had any questions, it'd be like, oh, okay, like, oh, that's how she got her powers, or that's how, you know, Peter Parker became Spider-Man. So, it you know, for me, it was kind of a blast. You know, it was also really a great opportunity to catch up on some books that I hadn't read. I mean, like, there's a lot of books, like, I mean, I've been reading comics since I could read. I mean, literally, my brother taught me how to read using comic books, only Marvel comic books. None of that Archie stuff. But it was great to revisit some old classics, but then, yeah, like, to read some stuff. Like, I hadn't read Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, and it's amazing. You know, I hadn't caught up on Ms. Marvel. I'd read the first, like, couple of arcs, and, like, that book is incredible. And so it was really fun to just kind of, you know, get to play in every single, you know, sandbox in the Marvel Universe, and with incredible artists. I mean, right out of the gate, we did, like, I don't know, like two dozen or not two dozen, but it was like, it felt that way because we just kept churning them out with Mark Bagley, who is like, you know, he's a legend, you know. And it was great to be able to collaborate with all the artists. I kind of write now in a little bit of a looser style where I try to just kind of suggest, like, hey, here's some stuff that's going to happen on this page, but I don't try to dictate, you know, too much about, like, exactly every, so just kind of free up the artists as much as possible. Because for me, like, you know, these, you know, artists are coming in, and it's like, they really got to pack in a ton of content into three pages, and I wanted them to have the most fun to be able to explore those pages as much as possible. So it was a blast.
You kind of touched upon this, but it just must be fascinating because you're dealing with characters, some of whom have been around for 50 years, some have been around for a couple of years. Yeah. So is that interesting to be like, okay, you know, your approach on, say, you know, Iron Man is going to be very different from Ms. Marvel because of the history involved.
Yeah, there were definitely a lot of conversations, or, like, sometimes I would take a swing and, you know, I would hear back from the editor of that book, like, hey, like, that's cool, but, like, we don't need to cover all 700 years. And then in some cases, I try to keep it current. I think there was one, like, that we did for the Thanos book. Thanos? Does anyone know?
It's an eternal debate. I say Thanos most of the time.
Thanos. Yeah. What do you say?
What's the? Is there
Thanos?
Another one?
I've heard Thanos.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No,
that's,
it's Thanos.
That's clearly wrong.
Okay. All right.
That's,
okay.
I mean, there's no debate here. It's definitely
you
Thanos.
You heard it here first. Though.
Yeah. No. I will put that in canon.
Okay, good.
Right now.
Someone update the wiki.
Yeah.
But I kind of had just done the sort of recent run, and Darren was like, "Hey, like, I mean, like, two words, Infinity Gauntlet, like, look, we have to, like, get a lot of stuff in here." But, you know, all the credit belongs with Darren and Kathleen, who had an impossible job. Like, we worked with, like, you know, a dozen of our artists, you know, a ton of colorists and letterers, and again, coordinating all that stuff with the each editorial on each book was a big lift on their end. I just got to have fun and read comics and, like, you know, and get again to get to play with every toy in the sandbox.
What would you say was the most challenging primer page to write?
You know, what was the most challenging one? It was the book that I'm writing, because you know, Spider-Man, Deadpool. Like, to your point, it's one of those ones that they have a long history together, but that book is only a couple years old.
Sure.
And so I was like, well, do we summarize what's happened? Do I need to tee up what's happening in our book? But also, Deadpool's such a weird character. Like, and it was, I think it was Nick's idea. He was like, let's go meta and weird with it. And but we all couldn't quite agree on what meta and weird was, because, you know, you can go anywhere with that guy, you know. So that one ended up strangely being like the one I probably went to the mat, like, you know, like the most drafts on. But also, I was struggling with it because I was like, well, I kind of want to tee this up, but I don't want to spoil that. And it was just, it was that one was a lot more back and forth than I was like, oh, this is an easy one. I know what happens in this book. Yeah. Like, but yeah, that one ended up being the most challenging.
It seems like that. I see the really cool thing about it, though, but also, of course, daunting is getting to sort of speak in the voices of all these different characters and, you know, like Deadpool or Gwenpool, who have such a different approach than some of your more straightforward heroes. So is that kind of an exciting thing? Because, yeah, you haven't written all these characters to get to, like, dive in for those three pages each.
Yeah, absolutely. That was like the biggest challenge, like, was to just, and I try to read, like, you know, the most recent issues to just get, you know, in certain cases, like, you want the voice of the character and you don't want just, like, you know, narration. In some cases it was like, you know, on team books and stuff like that, I would use just, like, sort of, you know, narration and just, you know, kind of classic and stuff like that. But it's funny you mentioned Gwenpool, like, you know, Gwenpool herself, you know, Heather was able to give me, like, a really great guideline on, like, hey, here's how this character works. And, you know, there were times when, you know, it was really great to know that I had the person on the front lines to be able to course correct me. You know, I think, like, probably, like, the more intimidating ones, I did kind of revert to narration because I'm like, well, there's no way I can write this character better than this writer. You know what I mean? So I definitely cheated on some of them. But it was also really fun. You know, my day job is working in TV. And, you know, part of, I mean, 90% of my job when I join a staff on a show is, like, I have to assume the voice of the show and also, you know, bring my weirdness to it. So I think that was, like, one of the few examples where TV writing actually helps comic writing.
Nice. Right.
So it was nice to be able to rely on one skill I have. So.
Well, you talked about it, but you're going to be taking over Spider-Man Deadpool. So can you preview for us a little bit about what you've got coming up in your run?
Yeah, so Spider-Man Deadpool picks up after the events of Secret Empire, which I think we can talk about. It's no longer a secret, right?
No longer a secret.
We can just call it Empire.
Public Empire.
Public Empire number one comes out next month. And, you know, if you've been reading, you know, their flagship books, if you've been reading Dan's run on Spider-Man, and if you've read Jerry's run on Deadpool, like, they've done an amazing job of sort of resetting each character's status quo, you know, post Secret Empire. I don't know how much of this stuff is public knowledge about what's going on in Peter's life, but he's definitely had a reset that you'll see shortly, and Deadpool has as well. And that one, I think, is public knowledge because everyone knows he killed America's sweetheart, Agent Coulson, and as a result, is one of the most wanted men in the Marvel universe. But the thing that was great about, you know, talking to Nick and Jordan, who edit the book, was that, you know, they really had a clear sense of where Deadpool's place was in the Marvel universe because of what Jerry's doing with the character in the main book. And it's great from a character standpoint because, you know, if you've been reading the main book, he kind of tried to be a good guy again and, like, just epically failed. And now he's just like, you know what? I'm going to go back to putting the Merc in Merc with a mouth. You know, I'm going to go back to being that guy again. And it was perfect for us on Spider-Man Deadpool from a character standpoint because all the stuff that went on with Joe and Ed's run was all about Itsy Bitsy and like, you know, Deadpool going to the mat for Spider-Man. And now Spider-Man, it's not like, I don't know if I would say that, like, he definitely feels like he owes him, but he kind of feels like he owes him, you know? And so, but he's also super pissed because in the first issue, and we've talked about this, so I think it's public domain, Deadpool has become a bit of an arms dealer, and he may or may not have stolen a lost S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier that he claims he found in a ditch. And he's got a very colorful cast of characters that if you're a long-term Marvel fan, you'll recognize some familiar faces. Spider-Man finds out about this, and from his standpoint, it's like, you know what, this has gone on too long. Deadpool's got to go, like, you know, to prison now. And but from his perspective, he's like, but I'm going to fix him. I'm going to, like, rehab my bro. And obviously, like, you know, Deadpool does not give a swear word about what anybody thinks about him in the Marvel Universe, except for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So, like, Spider-Man gets a pass. So the way that Nick kind of, like, teed it up, I thought was really great, which is kind of like, they find themselves in these situations where it's Spider-Man saying, like, okay, you got to, you know, go down. But then they find themselves confronting something that's a bigger evil. And it's like, okay, we'll team up this time. But, like, at the end of this, like, you know, handcuffs and jail. And in the first three issues, you find out the person that they have to team up with. I don't think it's out yet, but it is someone who's a very familiar face to Spider-Man fans, and it's been a lot of fun to take a classic villain and sort of, you know, get to put a really fun, really dark spin on the character. So yeah. And it's Chris Pacello drawing,
yes.
Who's a legend. It was like one of the when I was dead broke in college, I would scrape together $3 to, or whatever it was then, to get his Generation X books, because nice. I'm a huge fan. And we had all had the good fortune of being in Los Angeles together at the outset of the book, and Nick and Chris and I all met at Disneyland.
Oh, nice!
And so we broke the first arc and, like, sort of like pieces of, because we're kind of flashing forward in the story as well.
Right.
While waiting for rides at Disneyland. Okay. So it was awesome. It was
He knows that not only am I obsessed with Disneyland, but I love doing work at Disneyland.
Yeah. I did not know that I would enjoy it, but, like, instead of just, like, you know, learning each other's life histories while waiting in line, we were just, you know, figuring out, you know, different characters to populate Deadpool's world with on the helicarrier. So we had a blast. It was really, really fun. The only thing we missed out on was they just had started, like, they were previewing what was going to be the Summer of Heroes.
Yes. Yeah.
And we went to that little Spider-Man corner, but there was a very long line to get a photo of Spider-Man. So I got a photo with Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, who's my favorite. So it all worked out. But I was like, Nick, like, you're like Vice, whatever his title is. I was like, come on, man. Like, those kids don't need their pictures.
Yeah. But
it turns out Nick's a really nice guy and just wouldn't do that. He's more Spider-Man than Deadpool.
I feel like, you know, Spider-Man and Deadpool are such great characters and so, you know, irreverent in their own ways. Obviously, Spider-Man also has plenty of, you know, drama going on, and Deadpool to an extent. But is it great to put them together because of that, because they both have very unique sensibilities in the Marvel Universe?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they both have a very different sense of humor, but I think they use humor the same way that I use humor, which is, like, to mask pain. So, you know.
We all are.
Yeah, I mean, we're all just dead and crying inside, right? This is radio, but we're all just lying on the ground and holding one another. So it makes the book, like, it gives the book permission to just be fun in a way. And that was another thing that both Nick and Jordan said early on, like, we want stakes and we want it to be fun. We want the book to continue what, you know, the really amazing foundation that Joe and Ed, you know, really on their run established. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. And again, it's a credit to particularly Nick. Like, sometimes I go a little too far with the humor, sometimes both in rating and in amount. And it's great, you know, working with Nick and Jordan, because they both kind of represent Deadpool and Spider-Man in their own way. Like, they're nothing like them, you know, in real life, but, like, they're able to say, like, you know, hey, like, let's make sure that we're establishing, you know, very clearly early on that how high the stakes are, that this is life or death. And so it's like, it's just kind of finding that sweet spot and, like, how much humor you can have. And again, we were talking about it earlier, like, my day job used to be working on Supernatural, which has a lot of that kind of stuff where you're, you know, there's really high stakes, but there's also a lot of humor. Some of it's gallows humor, some of it's just, you know, like, pop culture and meta humor. So again, it's one of the few times, anytime my day job can actually, like, help me in my night job, it's always a bonus.
Yeah, we were just mentioning before we came in here, this is our first time meeting in person after sort of hearing each other's names for a long time, because I covered Supernatural a lot at my old job, and like, you were constantly mentioned, Felicia Day, and a lot of people would mention you say very nice things. So
And he's
not living up to it.
Yeah. utter disappointment. Yeah. Whereas you are.
Oh, thank you.
There you go.
Before we let you go, I wouldn't want to let you go without saying complimentary things about two projects which have wrapped recently. Number one, Spidey, which I think was just one of the most fun, awesome books. Great for any age Spider-Man reader. And then Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme,
which
I know my usual podcast partner, Ryan Penagos, huge fan of that book, and I loved it as well. And it really wrapped up beautifully with that all horizontal issue. And just wanted to pay you a compliment, not really a question.
You can talk about
how great you are.
I won't, but I wanted to thank you guys because, you know, particularly after when the first trade came out, I did hear a lot of people like were like, "Oh yeah, I heard about it on the podcast," and like, you know, like I wanted to check it out, and Spidey too. Like, it's interesting, you know. Thursday is you know a lot more crowded this year than I thought it was going to be, but it was great, and it was mostly because I'm tabling with Nate Stockman, who did a bunch of issues on Spidey.
He's so good.
He's the best. He's awesome, and we've never met IRL, as the kids say. I think in real life. I think some of them. I'm 1,000, so I wouldn't know. But it was really great yesterday. We had a lot of literally all ages, you know, people that are like diehard old school, you know, Spider-Man fans, and then like a lot of parents with kids, and be like, yeah, I gave them this book to kind of like, it's like a gateway drug, you know, into the Marvel universe. But that was a blast to work on, you know. I was really happy with how that book turned out, and Doctor Strange too. Like, that was a dream team to work on artistically and story wise.
I was so excited when I saw that Spidey come out because as a kid I had one of the Spidey Super Story comic books they made based on the Electric Company thing. Yeah. So that was great. It was such a great book.
I was in, we were working on it. I think it had a different title. And then Nick was like, let's call it Spidey. And I was in Baltimore, and there's like a pop culture museum there.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an incredible like comic book collection, and I saw one of those old, and I hadn't seen it in years, the Electric Company Spidey one, and I was like, can we use this logo? And yeah, and he worked it out, and we did one of the Treasury size editions. It was a great experience working on that book.
That's awesome.
Well, Robbie, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great rest of your show, man. Eric, great job.
Oh, well, thank you. And he actually did live up to it. You know, I take it back. I take it all back.
I'm actually pointing a gun at him right now.
Oh, boy. Yeah. This is Marvel, your universe.